I have one other comment.
Sure.
About the AIDS virus, it's man-made.
You're talking about Bob Strecker? Dr. Strecker?
I believe so. That's the gentleman that I have a video on, and he tells about the strain.
And, well, there's been a number of articles on the AIDS virus, one of which is called Who, WHO, Killed Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And the articles that I've read essentially base their argument, which is a rather good one, on the mathematical projections of how fast any kind of new disease spreads.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem of it is, this disease got too many places, too fast, and is spreading at too much of a rate to have been the typical new disease.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I understand, yes. And it goes through all kinds of different social activities and everything else. So.
You got it. And of course, in the state of Florida, you know, they're concerned about encephalitis, which is transmitted by mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
There was a study some years ago by a noted doctor who worked at the, I understand he worked at the Centers for Disease Control.
Mm-hmm.
And he believed that the virus was being transmitted in the LaBel area of Florida by mosquito also.
Oh, is that right?
And when he released a paper on it, they suddenly put him in the back room and told him to shut his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows?
Well, it looks as if, according to reference 9 of De Palma's paper on the end machine, that the Department of Commerce in 1990, January 2nd, published an article entitled "A Research and Development Source Sought Broad Agency Announcement for Homopolar Machinery and Current Collector Technology." Well, that's kind of long and complicated. What it really means is, it looks as if the U.S. Navy is powering under top secret black programs all new ships of the line using the end machine technology.
Right.
The problem is access to those classified documents that will prove that assertion. What we have in the public press and the public print is a very strong suggestion that in fact is what is going on here. So again, a technology which should be used to save mankind from environmental problems, from the idiocy of the Middle East, etc., is going again into something which is more efficiently used in terms of how to kill people. This is not as it should be. And there is a way to change this into what should be, and it's in everybody's hands. So I would like to hear and see and hear about a lot of people out there who are listening to our voices this afternoon, who get on the phone, who send faxes, or who send postcards to Chuck Carter at the Cedar Key address, and who simply send a check for $9.95 plus $2 postage and handling, and get copies of this book, and then take them down to your local congressman and ask him, when are you going to get NASA to bring this device and others like it in for public demonstration and test, and when are we going to invent our way into the future as opposed to killing our way into it?
I think it's important that we tell people what their money goes for. Obviously, the book cost less than $9.95 to manufacture, although it was extremely expensive. I think the color separations were close to $1,000. Then, of course, we had to pay for the setup of the printing, and, you know, there's an awful lot of money went into it, and the first copies were expensive. But anything that's left over when we send the book to you at $9.95 goes into our general fund, which does things like buy time on the shortwave so that the 2.5 million watt beam covers the planet. It goes into a mailing that is going to the media to bring this information also to the media. It goes into all the different activities that you write us about, and we talk about on the air, to try to get word out and to try to make this a better and safer planet to live on. So that's where all the money goes. Nobody is going to put $3 or $4 in their pocket and buy champagne and caviar. There's just no possible way. It all is going to go to make sure that something gets done. Stay. Yes, to say. Richard, are you there?
I am here.
Good. What do you know?
Well, I have some exciting news at the top of the show.
All right.
NASA has given us a date for Hoagland's Mars.
Great.
As of half an hour ago.
Yeah.
And you and America are the first to hear. Copy this down. February 6th, Sunday.
Do this again now.
January 6th.
January 6th.
Sunday, 12 noon, Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah.
Westar 4, transponder 24. That's when NASA Lewis will uplink to Westar 4, Hoagland's Mars, the first installment.
January 6th, that's 1991.
One.
Yeah.
Hmm. And we do not know when the individual PBS stations will rebroadcast it. What I would recommend strongly if you want to see it on that date is they call their local PBS station, inform them of the feed, and you know, this is a democracy. If enough people call up, things can happen, and they will put it on the schedule.
I am just delighted to hear that.
That makes two of us.
All right, that's new and exciting stuff. Tell me what else.
Unsolved Mysteries has a special coming up this Sunday. All right? It's a special. They're leading off the program with the Mars data. And coming on the heels of NASA's announcement this morning of our program, who knows what might be in the wind?
Well, what might be?
Well, look, when President Gorbachev and President Bush met in Helsinki during the press conference where everyone was in attendance, Gorbachev leaned into the mic and he said, "The President and I have a very important secret. Is this the time?" And he looked at Bush, and Bush looked back at him and looked him right in the face and kind of grimaced. And then he decided not to tell anybody. It has been our perception for some time that if the data we are looking at on Mars is real and it has all the concomitant implications, the world has to change.
Now, superbly edited and put some other information with it, which has been released as the End Machine book, is starting to already get some flack from the skeptical community, who says it can't be so. Realize, please, that at the turn of the century, the scientific skeptics explained to America that you could not go over, I believe it was about 21 miles an hour. If you did, you would die. And I appreciate the skeptics and their various publications. And, you know, the minute we utter a word, I get at least one or two letters from the various skeptics who are prepared to come on with their experts and tell us that it all ain't so. What are these skeptics going to do who have been laughing at the Mars data? What are they going to do when NASA officially says, yeah, there's something to it? Who do they apologize to, or will they?
But you see, I don't care. I don't think that's where we should be focusing our attention. With some of this data, yeah, it is very binary. We're either right or wrong, but there's a process to find out if we're right or wrong. And it really doesn't matter whether we're right. Is the physics right? Have we discovered something new and important for society as a whole? I hold that discovering the human race is not alone, that there are artifacts right next door where we can probe and investigate and analyze and explore, you know, with men and women, is going to be the biggest breakthrough in the history of this planet, bar none. And that it's important that we verify whether that is a fact or it is not a fact. And it's very easy for us to do that. We simply go back to Mars, take better pictures, and we'll all know.
Yeah, but the problem I have here, Richard, is the skeptics who literally, you know, have made fun and ridiculed any type of information or any type of what do you want to call it, venturing forward, or I'm going to use the term open-mindedness. They've done a tremendous amount of damage. I doubt seriously if the cold fusion thing is ever going to go, you know, anywhere with all of the people who are so busy taking pot shots at each other.
Well, I disagree, because
okay. It
comes down to whether you're a kind of person who believes in authority or believes in your own data, who believes in testing what authority says, either
okay.
Pro or con.
Richard, hang on. Let me do the break. When we come. Richard Hoagland, are you there?
I am here.
Well, where do we go with a lot of the new technology that seems to be so promising, but so many people are shooting at it? Cold fusion is one. What is the status of that?
Well, there are many laboratories, university labs overseas, a lot of them overseas, University of Rome and Tokyo, some in Europe, that have got remarkable consistent results. Even the university, Stanford University here in the United States, has reported a long-running set of experiments that show that something very wonderfully inexplicable is happening in terms of cold fusion. When you put the deuterium and the palladium together in a bath, and you put a control side by side, you get heat out of the one and nothing happens in the other, and you get a lot of heat, and it's totally beyond what any chemistry would predict or any funny kind of surface reactions or whatever. Whether it's fusion or not is now at this point highly debatable. My strong suspicion is that if cold fusion is a real phenomenon, it probably works in terms of the physics that we have decoded vis-a-vis Cydonia, and that De Palma has shown us in one set of experiments in a very different kind. But we haven't done our homework yet, so I can't say that for sure. All I can say is my suspicion, and I'm in touch with some physical chemists, and we're trying to run down that road and see whether there's something at the end of it. If you read carefully the Skeptical Inquirer and all the Inquirer clones all around the country, they never get their hands dirty. They never do the work. They always sit back and critique and take pot shots, but they never do the experiments. And to me, experiments take precedence over opinion.
Everybody has an opinion, don't they?
And freely express it, most often when they probably should not.
Yeah.
Well, to give you an example, in the last 24 hours, I have learned that the Edwards Air Force Base Astronautical Laboratory, which I have mentioned here as being interested in our own work, is dispatching a team of physicists and chemical people and mechanical engineers up to De Palma's and look at the end machine and the associated experiment. And the way they're doing it is very cute. They are not doing it officially. They are forcing these people to take a day's leave so that no one back at the DOD or in other places in Washington can claim this is an official inspection team.
Okay.
We are playing games. We are doing some kind of schizophrenia. But the bottom line is that a group of very important people, in the sense of they know their backgrounds and they're asking the right questions, are going to be making that trip over to see De Palma's technology, regardless of what the Skeptical Inquirer says, apropos of the opening comments we made at the top of the show.
And he raised a very interesting point apropos of our old friend Dr. Carl Sagan. Carl has written for years and was involved with Eric Burgess and I in the design of the first message sent out into the galaxy, the so-called Pioneer 10 plaque. Well, just suppose that we are looking at some kind of message in return. Just suppose the plaque was read by someone, and someone has now come here and is paying us a visit in kind and leaving us messages on the largest blackboards available, namely, you know, the landscapes of planet Earth. It would behoove us to kind of get together now and figure it out and maybe, as my friend proposes, begin a potential series of answers. And I said to him, well, I wouldn't wait for next spring when you'd have to go to farmers and get permission to traipse around in their fields and make, you know, companion circles hoping that someone would answer. I would start now when it's going to be winter and desolate with snowblowers. And I would make a series of pictograms in the snow on the pattern of the circles, on the mathematical pattern that some of us have now been working on. And I would see if somebody answers by putting real designs in the snow. Because the one thing about patterns in snow is you can't get to and from the patterns without making footprints. Many credible institutions beyond Utah, Stanford University, people in Tokyo, the University of Rome, many others I'm aware of, have replicated Posner Fleischmann's original reports and statements, namely bizarre amounts of heat energy coming out of these baths with palladium rods and liquid heavy water, all right? We do not know where that energy comes from. I would almost bet that it's not fusion, that it's something much more interesting. No matter whether Pons and Fleischmann turn out to be total charlatans, the fact is, how did the other guys duplicate their work, and what has become of those efforts? You see, when you make it personal, when you focus it on one single point personal failure, then you have created a great vulnerability in the onward march of new knowledge. What we need is broad democratization of these efforts, and that's why I'm pushing very strong for people to buy the De Palma research papers book, duplicate, and we'll help you duplicate the experiments, democratize it by a factor of 10,000, and then you simply take your statistics. It doesn't matter whether someone doesn't do it right. The bulk of the experiments will tell us the tale and tell us the truth.
What will 50 times more resolution, as I've heard it stated, on any photographs mean to specifically the fortress?
Okay.
In your opinion?
Well, it will mean we will see stunning evidence if we're right. And I'm glad you picked that object. If I had one photo, if they would only give us one picture and they could target it so we get it, I would pick of the so-called fort.
You and me both, really.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's because you're looking deep inside that triangular inner courtyard, which is a mile square, is going to have all kinds of stunning debris. We're going to see, at a resolution of 50 times better than Viking, you're going to see things 3 feet across. A coffee table size object would be one pixel, one picture element, which means something like a car or something like a boat. I'm just using conventional things here. We don't expect to see cars.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Something of that nature that would have recognizable detail, protuberances, geometry. The long and the short of it is we're going to see stunning, redundant geometry, which only is created by intelligence of the nature that we're going to see if the model is correct. And that's why these new photographs are so critically important.
Richard, I believe with all of the articles coming out that we're getting warmed up. National newspapers carried an article about the potential of life on Mars and water underneath the surface of the planet. Clyde Tombaugh, who is a wonderful astronomer, said there might be a trillion civilizations out there. All of these articles have been coming along now the last month rather quickly. Are they turning up the heat?
Why are they putting Hoagland's Mars on NASA?
Okay.
Online, I think you're right. I think we are being prepared, and I think there is a timeline, and it's in the control of someone else. What we can do is what a gentleman from Washington did just the other day, and he sent me this letter, and I want to read 3 or 4 lines to you because it really tells you how much clout you and I and your audience, Chuck, can have.
Okay.
He says, and I won't mention his name, not because he doesn't want to mention it, because I want to respect his privacy. As you asked, he says, I did call the U.S. House of Representatives and spoke to the Subcommittee on Space and Congressman Rowe's office. Congressman Rowe is the chairman of the House Committee on Space, Science, and Technology, and there is a Subcommittee on Space headed by a congressman I do not know because the former director had resigned to run for governor of Florida, and he lost. Anyway, he says, in each case, I was assured that Cydonia was on the program for the Mars Observer mission and that Mr. Mallon's camera would be taking the pictures. Additionally, I told that many people had specifically asked about Cydonia.
Okay, Richard, stand by if you would. We're going to do...
That's what makes it so ironic that they're now putting a program on the NASA satellite called Hoagland's Mars, which is a summation of our entire 13 years, 15 years of inquiries, because it's come full circle. Someone in NASA is finally at least giving this data the appropriate platform it deserves. And it looks like it's perpetual motion, but it's not, because what we think is happening, what I think is happening based on our Cydonia work, is that the rotation of the magnets opens a gate to the fourth dimension, and the energy simply flows downhill from the fourth to the third, and
right.
is manifest in three space as electrical energy.
Right. Is he still using the neodymium magnet?
Yep. But what's neat is that they are hexagonally shaped in terms of their crystalline form, and it's the hexagonal pattern, which is really the tetrahedral pattern, the double tetrahedral pattern, which is the heart of our Cydonia equations.
Uh-huh.
That's why we're very interested and why I want to now see replications of the other experiments, because they all should come from the same underlying physics. Bruce's end machine is only a special case of the energy being available as electrical output, whereas what's really happening is there's a more general field effect. There's a more general energy transfer here, and that's what's doing the slowing down of time, if
right.
in fact it works. And to do that is much simpler than building an end machine. I mean, De Palma has spent maybe $500,000 building his end machine. He
right.
can produce a spinning disc with an electric motor in a properly shielded box for probably $100 or less. And if you
good,
do
yeah.
it, and you put watches near it, and you have them calibrated to look at in terms of watches far away, the predictions of the De Palma papers, the book we're putting out, says that time should slow down. And there are many other experiments you can do in the vicinity of that spinning disk. You can grow things. You can put this under ant, you know, hills or ant collections or termites or little clutches of mice or rabbits or whatever. And the biological effects should be interesting.
Right.
And there is no limit to the ingenuity of the American people in finding out what the limits of these various experiments could be once they get going, and that's what I am waiting with bated breath to see happen.
Summer, you know, all that stuff's in print.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the fact that whether you liked it or not, there were going to be a lot of revelations about UFOs and space. We did that last summer. I predicted that there would be a major event in October of 89. And, of course, the Russians announced that a UFO landed in their country. In our current issue of our magazine, we have published an article given to us by the Russians with photographs of pieces of an extraterrestrial spaceship that they gave to us.
Right.
You know, you don't see this in the U.S. News and World Report. They're just afraid to run this stuff.
Sure.
But we publish what's coming.
Why is it they haven't just done a flyby and let everybody know that they're here? You know what I mean?
Well, they have done flybys.
I mean, a real obvious one, like...
They've done obvious ones.
Yeah, like... Well, I mean, you know, like during a football game, you know, a 49er game or something, they get
well,
out.
Well, I don't know so much about that, but you know, we have photographs that people have sent us, and we published last winter of these devices where they actually, you know, performed for a guy with a camera.
Wow.
Okay?
Okay, thanks a lot, Jeff.
You bet. You take care.
Bye.
For the people, continue. Stay with us, everybody.
The situation with George Knapp is he did a television series called UFOs, The Best Evidence, Part 1, and it has won a number of awards, the Associated Press Regional Award, the United Press International National Award. And what I'm trying to say to you is that recognized mainstream news organizations have said that this is not only good stuff, but obviously is award-winning.
That's fantastic.
Okay? What they are saying is, yes, there is something going on, and Mr. Knapp, who is a well-respected journalist, is not kidding anybody. So, the other revelation he made yesterday was that ABC Television is buying footage from Channel 8 Television, KLAS, or is obtaining it, whatever, and ABC TV is doing a series. They have crews out there right now going to do a series, like an Unsolved Mysteries, but the first program is going to be on what's going on out in the desert, and in my opinion, in his opinion, is going to be the first national recognition that something is going on. We saw three things that have occurred. Number one, not too long ago, there was an article in most Sunday papers about the possibility that life existed on Mars or could exist. Then Clyde Tombaugh, who's the professor emeritus of astronomy, he's 84 years old, very well renowned. I believe he's the guy who discovered Pluto. This world-famous astronomer has openly stated he believes there's a trillion civilizations out there other than us. And that went to all the newspapers on a Sunday some weeks ago. USA Today last week had a fabulous article, very even-handed, saying that the circular evidence all over the world is inspiring talk of UFOs, and even gave accounts of people who saw UFOs prior to the circles. So
is it really happening?
Something's going on, and George Knapp won an Associated Press Award and a United Press International Award for his news documentary of fact, not fiction. They are producing and shooting now. It would be step one of the legitimate U.S. government winking hello method of letting the...
Yeah, in other words, the lid's being lifted a little bit.
Or let's say the warm-up process.
Yeah, I hear you, yeah. Any idea when that special will come off?
I'm not ABC, just don't know, but I would imagine, given the current legitimate interest in the press,
yeah.
Because Mr. Knapp won the Associated Press Regional Award for the series. He also won the UPI National Award. We understand, and no one yet has said that it's not correct, we understand that the United States Navy did a routine filing in the Federal Register about a year or so ago, stating that they were going to be using this technique to power ships.
We've had a rather interesting event happen in the last 24 hours. NASA headquarters has put a stop on the production of Hoagland's Mars.
Wait a minute. The program is essentially produced. You just say they're not going to show it.
What they have asked to do is to review it, which is unprecedented. Dr. Lynn Bondurant, who is chief of education at NASA Lewis, called me last night, yesterday afternoon, quite late. He had just received a phone call from Dr. apparently Robert Brown, who was director of education at NASA headquarters, who is his boss. Every NASA center has an autonomous education division or department. JPL, Houston, the Cape, Goddard, NASA Lewis, NASA Ames, etc. And Dr. Bondurant is chief of education at NASA Lewis. They have been producing this program since they interviewed me extensively March 19th of this year. So we're talking something like, 9 months? But this has been in production, in the works. And Dr. Bondurant has been in touch with NASA headquarters on many things, program schedules, production plans, travel, trips, educational projects, you name it. Yesterday afternoon, without warning, Dr. Brown's office called and said that they had to see a copy of the final tape to review it before they would allow it to air. And when Lynn called me, he was very distressed because he says, I cannot get to them in time to get it on the satellite by January 6th, so effectively it has been bumped off the satellite. Problem is, of course, the holidays. Problem is Christmas and New Year's and paid leave and all those things that happen at the end of the year. Everything goes into a glacial mode and nothing happens, particularly around Washington, D.C. So it looks, unless an act of God or an act of the American people intervenes, that you won't get to see Hoagland's Mars.
Isn't that great? That's really cute. I wonder who people could call if they wanted to see it.
Well, probably Dr. Brown himself, since he's the guy who made the phone call and ordered the review. You have to understand that Lynn Bondurant is a veteran with NASA almost since its inception. He has been in and out of NASA. He was head of public education at the Air and Space Museum. He's been at NASA headquarters. He's been now at NASA Lewis for several years. He is visible many, many times on the SpaceWorks programs on NASA Select. He is an able and very innovative educator at the forefront of using the technology and the vast NASA resources to try to help the failing American educational system.
Mm-hmm.
For someone to suddenly, peremptorily, without warning, peer over his shoulder and basically question his judgment when thousands of programs have aired under his supervision and hundreds of interviews, this is the only one. I mean, it just kind of stands out as a signal in the noise, and it makes you wonder what the heck is going on. The guy who was responsible is Dr. Robert Brown, who is head of education at NASA headquarters. His phone number, if one wanted to ask him what is going on, is area code 202-453-1110. That's 202-453-1110.
Dr. Robert Brown.
Dr. Robert Brown.
But don't you think that by giving out his phone number, you're essentially going to cancel the program altogether?
I think the program has been canceled. Now, the only possibility that the program will air that I see, and again, this is not official, this is my opinion, is if people let Dr. Brown know they want to see it, and program managers and program directors and other news people who we know are interested because we've received calls from stations as far away as Anchorage, Alaska, Chuck, due to our appearances on your show. If they call Dr. Brown and say, okay, look, we agree that you have the right and the it is appropriate for you to review controversial material, but it should be done with alacrity and it should be done so that the schedule which was advertised can be met. The problem here is that we're going to get bogged down in the schedule because it's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. So what people can do is to pile a little grease here. And if they do that, and if the agency is as responsive as they have been on many other occasions, this program can go forward. Look, I have seen this script. I've had professional television people, professional producers, 20, 30 years sensitivity at major stations, KDKA, WRC-TV, etc., look at this script. They have commented on its fairness and objectivity and its reasoned treatment of the data. There is nothing inflammatory or incendiary or secret in this program, and this is all the more anomalous because, according to Dr. Bondurant, this has never happened to him in any program he's ever done.
Okay. For those who are listening and they're saying, what is this gentleman complaining about? Richard Hoagland is the gentleman who worked with NASA. He was invited to NASA Lewis twice, not once, but twice, gave programs. And he has been essentially the forerunner in publicizing.